Welcome to the Addiction Solution Podcast. I'm Michelle Dunbar. Enjoy listening and watching as addiction experts Mark Sheeran and I cover controversial as well as helpful topics on addiction, how to move past it, and other related subjects. As two of the co-founders of the Freedom Model, Mark and I will give you a completely new perspective on the topics that matter to you. We will take to task the Recovery Society's lies and misinformation and replace them with facts, research, and the methods to move on from addiction struggles without 12-step meetings, rehabs, and the shackles of endless recovery. Let's escape the treatment and recovery trap together and learn to be free. Welcome to the truth. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Addiction Solution Podcast. I'm Michelle Dunbar.
And I'm Mark Sheeran. And with our colleague Stephen Slate, we wrote The Freedom Model for Addictions, Escape the Treatment and Recovery Trap. All right. So today we're going to talk about what?
Well, first, we're going to remind you that you can become a certified Freedom Model coach. You can work directly with us to learn our methods, our proprietary coaching method, learn the Freedom Model inside and out, and become an independent coach of the Freedom Model and get our personalized instruction and mentorship. Go to thefreedommodel.org/certification. You can get more information there. There's also a video that you can access through the app that has that's an informational video. It's about a half hour long. If you want, you can call us at 1-888-424-2626 to talk with us about becoming a certified Freedom Model coach.
The other thing we have, of course, is the workshops for PMO issues and for substance use issues. And they're very affordable, and they're probably the fastest way to get over an addiction, right? Quote unquote, an addiction, and move on with your life.
During the last podcast, I said, hey, send us your topics. And we got flooded with topics. So this one comment on the last podcast episode is the one we want to talk about today. Make a video on how to overcome confusion in the first few days after you stop, and also overcome the expectancy that smoking, drinking, or engaging in your behavior will stop this confusion. I mean, it's so hard to fight that thought. Thank you.
Boy, that's a big topic, I think, because essentially we wrote this book, you know, this 470-page behemoth to do exactly that, right? But I think specifically in this question is that window of the first week after you quit or change or whatever.
Yes. Yes. And because my first thought when I read that was, I absolutely understand this.
Me too.
I absolutely understand this because you get to a point, everybody gets to a point, well, not everybody, but most people get to a point where they're still engaging the behavior. They hate the consequences. And so they want to stop, kind of,
yeah,
but not really, because this is true. Okay. You stop doing what you really don't want to do. And you do it rather easily. When I stopped drinking, I had a 6-year habit. And the last 6 months of it, I was doing it every single day,
right,
believing I needed it. I was, because I would have the, you know, the initial shakes in the morning. And so, you know, hair of the dog. So I had gotten to the cycle. And this is the cycle that a lot of people say is the evidence of addiction, right? That you have withdrawal and that this compels you to keep using. Well, it definitely was a reason for me to use the way I used in the last 6 months. But when I was done, I was done. And I can tell you that those first few days, I did not want to drink. I didn't want to at all. I was very sick.
But I remember, and it's interesting because I watched you at that time. And this person that asked the question is talking about that confusion, right?
Yeah, the confusion. Because that whole 6 months, I wanted to stop.
Right, right. And then you do quit. And then there's this confusing time, this weird window where there's a lot of fear, I think. And that is, am I really doing this? Am I really changing my life? Because it seems like this big paramount thing.
Am I giving this up forever?
Yeah. So here's something that's interesting about what you said. And that is you have this time where, and you said it, most people have a real hard time and that the consequences are heavy.
Yes.
But they still have just enough perceived benefit in getting blitzed that it supersedes the pain just enough. And boy, that's a difficult, miserable time.
Well, that's what they talked about. They were like, that thought comes in that I will feel better, right?
Yeah.
And alleviate my confusion if I just go do this.
So it's like a waffling period. It's like you're waffling, you're dipping in. And really what's happening, we've talked about this in other podcasts, really what's happening is the perceived benefits aren't as high as they once were. And you don't realize that you have a positive drive principle in play. You don't realize that you have autonomy. You don't realize you have free will. None of these are even thoughts for most people.
Right.
They have no concept on any of these ideas, these concepts. So they're just in this really, really difficult position of, fuck, I hate doing this.
Yeah. Why am I still doing
this? And I'd say 90% of our coaching students are there.
In that spot.
That's the real operative question of, you know, why do I keep doing something that brings me pain? Well, it obviously brings you enough benefit still.
Yeah.
A perceived benefit. And even though in reality, the benefits that you perceive may not actually be there, but that's a different topic. So here you are, you're in that waffling stage, you quit or you moderate dramatically, and then you become fearful because you're like, I don't know how to live my life. And I think this is really what gets at this. Is I really don't know how to live my life happily without this. And
there's an intense fear that I can't.
Right.
That I will never be able to. That brings us to another topic, which we'll incorporate in this, that people wanted us to talk about in this idea of post-acute withdrawal syndrome.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that I'm never going to be happy, or it's going to take me months to feel pleasure, to feel happiness again.
Well, let's hit that right now. Let's address that, because we have to wipe away that idea.
Oh, for sure.
If that is something that you're reading up on the web, that there's this sort of biochemical hacking that happens that makes it so that you're unable, based on the chemical action of substances, or
your dopamine centers are damaged.
Yeah, that's a huge bullshit lie.
It's such a lie.
It's just not true. Now, that's not to say that you don't have confusion, that you're depressed, that you don't understand what's happening, which has the result of really feeling bad.
For sure.
And making the substance or the fetish look more attractive. I think that gets back. So
that's a great point.
So what we're dealing with always is a couple of things. When you have legitimate detox, let's address that first. So each part. When you have legitimate detox, I can tell you that I've had vast amounts of experience over the last 37 years of dealing and living with people who were detoxing. And more than probably just about anybody in the industry, because I lived with my students for almost 12 years. And so I had detox as well. I went through withdrawal and went through a 3-day window that was really miserable, coming off of booze and other pills and stuff. So there's no doubt that if you come off of benzos or real heavy Xanax or Ativan or, you know, Valium or something like that, the benzos, that's the worst type of detox that I've ever witnessed. And it's the longest term. And I would say that when you have a real heavy, consistent user, I mean real heavy, where you're just lost, you're out in space, that can be a month.
Yep.
That can be a month, man. And
we have seen that.
And bizarre behavior.
And it does, if it's that severe, it does require hospitalization.
For sure.
It's very, very dangerous.
Yeah. But I've not seen it last more than 30 to 45 days. And when they're out of it, they're normal.
Yes, it's okay. Done.
Now, what confuses this? Now, all right, let me stick with this. Now, with booze, I've not seen it last more than, in real extreme cases, which are incredibly 2 weeks. Yeah,
2 weeks.
Two, maybe three.
But that's
weeks.
Super rare.
Super rare. I've only dealt with that out of 28,000 people that I've personally coached, me and Michelle. I've probably seen that only 10 times. where it was that long term. Most of it's 3 to 7 days.
Yep.
And then all the other drugs, methamphetamine is interesting because when you get psychosis from lack of sleep, lack of nutrition, plus the stimulant. So it's the action of lack of sleep coupled with the stimulant where the brain chemistry gets really goofy. And you will have some people do some wacky, strange, very schizophrenic style behavior. When you see that happen, that I've seen, and I had relatives, some of my younger relatives, go through it. And that's scary to watch because you think the person is completely insane. And that lasted in some cases as much as 3 to 4 weeks. But then it faded off. But what's interesting about that is if that person does meth and loses sleep for about 48 hours, they'll come right back. And it's scary to watch. So, but the good news is that's actually with sleep, proper nutrition, and everybody not freaking out, they usually come back into reality after a week or two.
Yeah.
But sometimes it will last. It takes a little while for the brain to go, okay, we got to get back into normalcy here. But beyond that, this idea that there is some sort of biohacking damage that makes it impossible for you to be a regular dude or gal is not true, but it becomes true if you believe it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, this whole idea that I can't experience pleasure. I can't experience happiness or joy for a period of time is absolute garbage, not rooted in any kind of valid science. You need to know that. And working with all of these people, I can tell you unequivocally that people experience pleasure and happiness and true joy. As a matter of fact, even people in 12-step programs have a name for it. It's called what? Pink cloud,
yeah.
Right? You're on a pink cloud. I can remember going to a meeting and I was probably a couple months and I was having a particularly good day, which was unusual in those first early weeks because I was understanding what I was being told, which was, you're going to struggle forever. Now that's the other side of it too. Which is it? You know, I'm forever going to want this substance. And the thought of that was outrageous, but I was having a particularly good day. And I had a woman, literally like this woman that was a guru, 25 to 30 years sober, sitting in the meeting. She had just come in from, actually, I think she was smoking a cigarette because back then they could smoke in meetings, You know, kind of blew smoke at me and was like, you better be careful on your pink cloud. You better have a pink parachute, right? So this whole idea that you're not going to experience happiness, there is nothing that supports it. And if you look around you, people quit heavy substance use on the regular. That's what the data shows. And do you think that they would be successful doing that if they had to wait 6 months to be happy?
So
just logically speaking, it's not logical.
It's not logical, but here's where some confusion does add in, and this goes back to the person's question. So a lot of times when I see somebody making the decision to change their life, they really do have a tremendous fear that they're never going to be happy.
Oh, I did.
Mm-hmm. And then they also have a fear of, I'm depressed. I'm a depressive. I am bipolar. I'm this. And then they go to therapy and they start piling on different identities and labels.
Yeah.
And if you get caught in that trap, that's why we say escape the treatment and recovery trap. That's the tagline of our book, right? It gets very easy to fall into the narratives that these things are real, and then you make them real.
Yep.
Now, if we back up to where you quit, where you make the decision to quit or moderate, and you're doing that, and you find yourself confused, but also just generally depressed because possibly your life is just in the shitter at the time. I mean, maybe you made a whole bunch of bad decisions in your life. I know my life was a complete mess. So it's very believable to take something that is normal, which is my life is kind of in the can right now, and my relationships are bad, I have legal trouble, maybe I've spent all my paychecks and my retirement account is gone because I smoked it up with crack or whatever it might be. So you take something that is actually quite normal considering the circumstances, which is I feel bad about my lifestyle.
Yeah.
And then it gets converted into this is a result of addiction and biochemical action. That's not your life generally is in a bad place.
Yeah.
So it has nothing to do with the chemical action or pause or any of this biochemical dopamine. It has nothing to do with that. Your dopamine is affected because you're thinking shitty things about yourself.
Yeah. You have to remember that the brain is the caboose.
Right.
It is not the engine. The engine is your mind.
Your beliefs, your understandings.
Your mind interprets things. Okay. So if you're interpreting that, this is going to be really hard. This is going to be really hard. And I'm going to want this every day.
Yeah.
Well, then your brain does release chemicals to make you feel the way you're thinking. It's the caboose.
Yeah. It's just reacting.
Okay. But if you have a more brighter outlook, And I remember making that shift relatively quickly at different stages, not consistently, but thinking, oh, I don't ever have to go through detox again. Once I got through the detox, right? And thinking, oh, thank God I'm feeling better. Like I'm physically feeling better. And then of course I went to my first AA meeting and instantly felt worse again. And so it was this back and forth, which is a lot of early changing. It's this, oh, I do feel really good. And I'm recognizing the benefits that I'm not doing this anymore. And I feel in control and I feel powerful. But if you're getting the opposite messaging that this is hard, this is very hard for you. And even if it's in the form of, oh, congratulations, you've quit something that you shouldn't have quit. Like, this is really hard. So even if you're getting it as a positive thing, boy, you can interpret that as, wait a minute, this is supposed to be hard.
That's right.
Okay. And so it is those first few days, weeks, whatever it is, that's where your beliefs are going to be everything.
That's it, man. So... So Michelle said it. So your mind is the interpreter. Your brain is the processor of thought. So our thoughts are where everything matters. You could almost say that the biochemical action of how thoughts work through brain tissue are almost inconsequential. We don't care. In the freedom model, we literally don't care about dopamine. I don't give a shit. You all have it. It does what it does.
Yep.
But what matters is what are your beliefs about what you're capable of, what you want to be doing with your life, and how do you view the substance and what magic have you infused into that experience? If you have built up the drug and the drug experience or the PMO experience or whatever it is into this massively important thing in your life, then it's going to be in direct proportion to how hard you feel it is to get over it. But when you start to realize that the substance isn't all that, and there's a lot of research we go through in the book to downgrade the substance, to downgrade PMO in the PMO book. All of these things, when you start to realize actually objectively what they are and how they work in our social lives and our body, and how really almost meaningless it is.
Right.
And you take the meaning out of it. Holy shit, it gets real easy to move past because you're like, this is just like any other choice that doesn't mean much to me. So the interpreter, the mind, your intelligence is really a miracle. That's the miracle of the human experience, is that you get to interpret things however you want to. They can be the devil or they can be heaven or they can be right in between, which is probably where they actually sit.
Yeah. So how do you, I mean, I think this person really wanted to know, you know, how do I get through those first several days? It almost implies, isn't it better? And I think a lot of people, when they think of support group meetings, think that's how it helped me. And those first few days, I was with people that understood what I was going through. They were people that I gained a social life I didn't have. Maybe I was leaving my substance using friends. And so I needed this substitute. There's a lot of different data on the benefits of support groups and the drawbacks of support groups. My thoughts are about it. When you're ready to be done, you're done for the most part. And I do remember thinking, no matter what, I don't want to go back to ever having to go through withdrawal again. Right. So did going to AA meetings help me or hinder me?
Right. Yeah. That's such a tricky thing. So I would say that what you just explained is that the meetings are really just a distraction, a temporary distraction from that first few days of being frightened that you're not going to make it, right?
Yeah.
And I get that. I understand, because you have this habit that is so all-encompassing. But then when you decide to change, you've made that decision. Then you get caught up in that little trap of AA. Here's why I call it a trap, and this is why. From a distractive value, it's probably a good one. And that is, you're going, you're meeting people that are talking about the same thing. You're sort of just, you're going somewhere. You're not at the bar. You're not physically. So you're physically separated from the booze, probably, or the drugs or whatever. But here's the problem. Here's the flip side. As soon as that distractive value is sucked up in time at the meeting.
Yeah. An hour at the meeting, maybe two if you go out afterwards.
You're also being filled with mythology that the drug is massively, massively, massively important.
And powerful.
So, which is a lie. Yeah. So that's what Michelle was just saying. Was it to the detriment? I think you could find other distractions in those first few days that are much, much more or less damaging. Now, distractions are distractions. They eventually wear out, and you're going to go back to the thing that you believe is most important to you and most beneficial in those perceived benefits. So if you don't attack, and this is the point I want to get to, if you don't attack the benefits pretty quick, you're going to go back to it.
Yeah.
So the benefits, the perceived benefits of the drug or the fetish,
that's exactly right,
are the, instead of distracting yourself with various hobbies and things like that, you have to move in a direction. Eventually, no matter what, you have to ask, is my fetish really all that?
Yeah.
Is it? And that's what the Freedom Model is all about. That's what Freedom Model coaching is all about. That's what our workshops are all about. It's attacking the actual perceived benefits, challenging them so that you can downgrade the fetish to where it becomes meaningless to you.
And that's how you change your preference. Okay, so what Mark is saying is exactly right, is going to a support group meeting gives you this temporary distraction, but for the vast majority of people, it ends up being a net negative. And it distracts you from actually solving the problem. And so if you are in that space of where I'm still doing this, but I fucking hate what it's doing to me, what it's doing to my life. I hate that I want to keep going to do this in spite of all the problems it's causing me. How you do that, how you change that is, geez, our workshop is tremendous for that.
Yeah, it is.
What you do is you sit with it, set aside the shame and guilt, because that's what's been building up, right? The shame and guilt is building up because you feel like you're a broken person. You feel like a terrible person, depending on what the problem is. If there's moral shit tacked onto it, like with PMO, a lot of this moral religious stuff gets tacked onto it. And then you start reading stuff online that's all about your dopamine in your brain. And so now you're tacking on more mythology that makes you feel less in control. Undoing all of that, setting all that shit aside and saying, what if this is bullshit? Right. What if all of it is bullshit? Let me just sit with this behavior and see, what do I still like about it? why is it so important to me? And if it is that important to me, without shame or guilt, let me look at, am I getting what I think I'm getting from it? Boy, it simplifies things so you can really look at it for what it is. And then most of the time, people, a light bulb goes off and they're like, oh my God, it's definitely not doing for me what I thought it was. And maybe it never did. And once you see that, you can't unsee it.
Yeah, that's what happens is once you ring that bell, it can't be unrung.
No.
And
you're like, I got to the point where I'm like, why did I ever like this?
Yeah.
Like being drunk, what was ever attractive about that to me? And when I say I lived drunk for years, okay, blackout drunk for years. And it was very appealing to me. And now the thought of it, I'm like, it seems absurd.
It seems silly. Yeah, it does. It becomes meaningless. So I think it's really important for people that are out there that are watching that you know that it's a very common occurrence for people to naturally do this sort of analysis internally and start to figure out this really isn't for me anymore. If you go into the treatment trap, if you go into the recovery sort of cult, what's going to happen is they're going to build that drug and that fetish up because it makes recovery valid and necessary.
It makes them necessary. The treatment industry itself, it's a great business model, quite frankly.
So if you step outside of that, you know, I always tell people that what the freedom model is that it's a deconstruction model. We deconstruct recovery, sweep that shit away. The meetings, all of it, the endless mat regimens, this idea that I got to be on pills for the rest of my life, good pills to combat bad pills and bad, you know, it's a game. It's all a game. Mm-hmm. It's all distraction. And here's the crazy part about this is we're distracting ourselves, from our analytical power of the mind to look at something that we're doing and asking ourselves, what is the value of that experience? Because when you can analyze what the value of an experience is, then you start to question it. Then you start to say, wait a minute, what the hell am I doing? And when I mindfully drink, when I get shit-faced, what am I actually experiencing? And now, there's a lot of nuance that gets lost if you don't read the whole book, because the book covers the whole gamut of mythology that is recovery. And there's a lot of nuance that's lost if you don't have a conversation. If you're sitting there and you believe with all of your heart that the substance does A, B, C, D, and E, when in reality it only does one of those things, those five other things need to be discussed and challenged by somebody that knows what the hell they're talking about, not by a recovery, you know, zealot, because they're just going to say, A through E is powerful and you're fucked and you need to go to meetings you need to distract yourself for the rest of your life this way. And that's miserable. That's miserable. That's why only 5% of the people that go to AA stick it out.
That's right.
Because they're like, this is fucking stupid. I don't want to go to meetings and talk about this forever. But some of those people go back to drinking. Some of the people just move on. They go, you know what? This doesn't make sense anymore.
And you know what? If you start looking, here's another part of this. There's probably, especially whoever wrote this, there's probably other things in your life that you used to do every day that you don't do anymore, right? That were very, very important to you. Maybe you got a divorce, you know, maybe you were married to your childhood sweetheart and you were married for 20 years and you broke up and got a divorce. How did you do that? I'm sure there was lots of confusion, lots of back and forth about that. We deal with difficult decisions about our preferences every single day. Okay. There are things, and this is one of the ways we help people in coaching. You know, we say, think of something that you used to do every single day that you don't do anymore. Why don't you do it? Why don't you do it? And what's amazing to me is we'll get people that'll come to, you know, that'll come to coaching for one particular problem. And they'll say, oh, I quit cocaine years ago. I quit smoking marijuana years ago. I quit smoking. Like, they'll have done all kinds of different things. And I'll be like, how did you do that? But this one thing you think has some kind of power over you.
And then the question, I got to jump in there. The question becomes at that point, what is the difference between cocaine and the other fetish? There's obviously some nuances with this other fetish where you haven't examined. When people tell me they get over cocaine, it's really common,
it's
by the way.
It's very common.
Because it's
like, 99% of people stop cocaine.
It's one of the most quit drugs. So, yeah. So people have this little spell with cocaine for a while and then they stop it. And I go, why did you stop it? Oh, I didn't see the value in it because I was outgrowing it. And they give me like five different reasons why it just wasn't working.
Yeah.
And I go, are those five different reasons apropos to alcohol? Because they're struggling with that still. And they go, well, yeah, but alcohol, I still believe it does this. And they don't realize that they're giving me all the reasons why they still prefer it. And then I go, we need to challenge those three things you just said. And we need to go through these chapters, these specific, and then I give them homework. And that's how coaching works. And within a few coaching sessions, they're like, holy shit, I can't believe I believed all that nonsense.
I know.
You know, and then they just walk out of this habit like it was nothing.
Like it's easy. And that's when we say that it absolutely can be easy.
But you need the right information.
Yeah. I smoked on and off for years. I was a closet smoker for years. And when I decided I was done, it was because I did exactly these things. I looked at it. I actually sat with it smoking going, do I still like this? Without judgment, without judging myself for doing it. And I was like, I don't like anything about it. There's nothing about it I like. And now I don't know what I ever liked about it. Like, this is what we're talking about. Okay. If you get rid of the mythology, and I don't just mean the mythology of addiction, but the mythology of substances themselves, the whole culture we have built up around these substances, like if people have been trying to alter their minds, through substances forever since the beginning of time. Okay. And so it's totally natural. So you can really set aside the shame and the guilt right away, right off the rip, because at some point, I mean, when you look at the data of the United States data of substance use, something like 70 to 80% of people between the ages of 16 and 24 qualify as having substance use disorder. They are binge drinkers, right? During that time, it's a lot of people. It's almost everyone. And then they just age out of it. Just age out of it. And by 35, it's less than 10%. Okay. So if you're 40 and you're still in that group, the odds are pretty good it's because you were shoved into rehab, or counseling, or maybe you had a mental health diagnosis or something else.
Or you just really, 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 really are hanging on to an adolescent view of the substance.
That's it.
Something you were taught young.
Yeah.
And some magical view of beer or alcohol or drugs or cocaine or heroin.
Or maybe you had a parent that had a problem. Right?
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
You took on that identity very young, like we did.
Yep. So there can be a whole number of reasons. But ultimately, all this means is if you're educated on the facts adequately, which is what we do, if you're educated on the facts, then you can make totally new decisions and none of the detox stuff will affect you longer. The pauses is non-existent. I want to just summarize. Pause is a lie. It's just not true.
Cell therapy, treatment programs, and medications.
Yeah, that's what it's there for. There's no evidence that there is long-term damage from these drugs. Obviously, if you have, I'm going to give a caveat. Obviously, if you have a massive overdose, there's damage.
Yeah, there's physical damage.
We get that. We get
that. And alcohol is a toxin to every organ in the body. So if you are a long-term drinker, heavy drinker, you may do brain damage. You do damage to your liver. You do damage to different parts. If you're a long-term smoker, you do damage to your lungs, to your heart, to your circulatory system. So look, there are physical ramifications for what we ingest, for sure.
But when it comes to how it affects the processing of
your thoughts,
it's not going to change your beliefs for you or against you. It's not the action of substances that do that. The action of substances is dependent on your beliefs about the substance, yes, and the perceived benefits you see in the experience, which is a completely different thing than what you're being sold all the time.
Yeah. All right. So I hope we helped clear that up for this person. And look, if you are struggling and you are there, it may be worth it to call and have a conversation with us, to look into coaching, to maybe look into getting the workshop, very affordable, mm-hmm, and start challenging those benefits.
And the other thing is, if you want to have some coaching with Michelle and I, the only way now to do that is through our online program, which is very affordable. And you get 170 video pre-recorded tutorials, plus if you keep the monthly survey or membership, then you can have
every single month.
That's right.
2 hours every single month. We are there to answer questions. If you were a previous member of the online program and you want to be able to meet with us, contact me by email or by phone, and I will give you a coupon code so that you can re-enroll at just the monthly rate. You don't have to pay for the online program all over again. If you just want to meet with us on a particular month, it's very inexpensive. So, we'd love to talk with you.
And lastly, if you want to have a coach, we will have our new coaches being added to our directory on thefreedommodel.org, and you can pick your coach and they will be on there this week.
Yes, within the week, you'll be able to see our brand new coaches. And like I said, we're going to be interviewing them so you can get to know them as well. All right. Have a great couple of weeks, everybody.
Take care.